Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet where we, two men named Dan, talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc. I am Dan Selke, the editor of WindowsComing.net. I am here with Daniel Roman, the other editor of WindowsComing.net. Daniel Roman, how are you?
I'm good. It's kind of a gloomy day here in upstate New York, so a good day to be on a computer talking about sci-fi fantasy nonsense. How are you, Dan?
Excellent. Here in Chicago as well. But you know what? I kind of like the gloomy days. When it gets too... It was hot here last week, and I didn't know what to do with myself. It was too warm. I didn't want to sacrifice anything. Doesn't matter. Who cares? Yeah. Hi, Julie. Good to see you. let's dive right in. So today, we are going to bring some cool stuff. There is some major activity on the sets of some major fantasy shows, including one that I know you like and one that I know that you are morally opposed to.
Sounds right.
We're going to get into some of what you talked about with iconic, hugely successful fantasy author Brandon Sanderson. You got an exclusive interview with him. He is a big deal. Ergo, you are a big deal. Ergo, we are a big deal. And hello to everybody watching these two big deals talk about big deals. But first, let's stop by Westeros, where things are full speed ahead on the third season of House of the Dragon. I wanted to touch on this for a couple of reasons. A, they're putting people up for Emmys. They haven't announced the Emmys yet, but HBO's trying to get, you know, a Best Actress nom for Emma Darcy, Best Supporting Actor and Actress noms for a lot of other people. Directing, yeah. Writing, et cetera, and so forth. Not much to report there, but we'll know in July who gets chosen.
Can we talk about these? Because there's one or two. So there's one or two on here that I'm like, yeah, of course. And there are one or two where I'm like, oh, man, I don't know about that. So Best Actress, Emma Darcy, obviously. Supporting Actor and Actress, Matt Smith, Tom Glenn Carney, Ewan Mitchell, Steve Toussaint, Fabian Frankel, Olivia Cooke, and Eve Best. Kind of just running through the main cast. Guest actor, this is the one that made me go, really? So they've got Risa Fons there and Patty Considine. And like, you know, Otto had some good episodes. He was really only in the first two. I feel like this is almost a, can we please throw a bone to Patty? Because Patty Considine's season was really last season where he did incredible work. Like, his snub is still the biggest snub of the entire show in terms of award nominations, in my opinion, he was just spectacular in the first season. This season, I don't know if it was, you know, the material he had, and people just were less enthused because of the whole Damon plot line. But I did a double take just now seeing his name there on the list. So do you think Patty Considine should get a guest actor Emmy for this season of House of the Dragon?
I think award shows are useless and worthless and entirely performative.
Touche.
So fair. If they want to throw Patty Considine an honorary Emmy for having a great job last season and to technically get him in for this one, I have no problem with this.
Yeah.
It's like when Whoopi Goldberg didn't win the Oscar for The Color Purple, which she's amazing in. Mm-hmm. And then she did win the Oscar for Ghost, which she is great in, but I don't know about like Oscar winning. Something fair. Like that, it'd be fine. Awards are dumb. They can do whatever they want. Not in business.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you saw the thing about the Oscars that they're changing it this year. So you can't just like put it on mute and leave the room. Like they had, it was this whole scandal where like they found out that a lot of people who vote on the Oscars don't even watch all the movies.
Which tells you how dumb it is, right? This isn't an award show podcast, but, and look, I enjoy award shows. I do. I kind of do. I not like I used to. It's fun to see people get dressed up and get drunk and go up there and thank God and their mother and their second grade school teacher and everybody and kicking a little award home. It's fun. But I think one should approach with a healthy appreciation for the performativity and the irony of it. It's fine. Everyone likes a party. Everyone likes free champagne. Everyone likes nice clothes and little gold statues, but it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, that's fair. And so, since it doesn't mean anything, obviously don't get too excited about it, but the episode that got the most submissions for House of the Dragon, obviously the Red Dragon and the Gold. Maybe the awards don't mean anything, but the putting that one forth, obviously that is the one that should be getting any and all noms. I think the only other bit that is even comparable is probably the big old dragon stuff from episode 7, which was cool from a special effects perspective. The work that the show did on Vermithor and Silverwing. But
it was neat.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That wouldn't be on the main show anyway.
I want to underline this. You're right. And then we'll move on. I swear immediately.
Okay.
You're right. People, they didn't even watch the movies they vote on at the Oscars. And they were still just voting. And we all acted like it was a really big honor. Which it is, it's cool, but yeah, it should tell you something that the voters didn't even watch the movies they were supposed to be voting on. So how like much of a reflection of the real quality can they possibly be?
Yep.
It's fine. It's a it whole is. Other world. Anywho,
yes.
House of the Dragon, the third season is filming right now. We have some big sets going up, like this set for King's Landing. I think that's the entrance to the Great Sept, which is neat. Notable is that they used to film this, I think, in the Spanish town of Casadas, but now they're just building the thing in Leavesden Studios in England. And then they're going to film outdoor scenes like in Wales and other places around England and stuff. But I think this is the end of Game of Thrones shows filming in Casadas, which has been going on for quite a while now, since back when Game of Thrones was on. Bye, Casadas. It's been real.
I hope not. You may be right. You probably are right. I think there are two main reasons I can imagine for why House of the Dragon would be making this move, which we have seen this set before when it was in an earlier state of construction, like a few weeks back, but now it's got blue screen behind it. They're getting closer to filming. They're painting it. The two main reasons I can think of, one is they're going to destroy stuff. And you can't destroy historic buildings. You know, there are riots in King's Landing at different points in the Dance of the Dragons. And maybe they needed a set where they can do stuff like that in a more controlled environment. The other is, of course, budgetary reasons. Maybe it was cheaper to just build these steps than fly a whole production out to Caceres. But it does make me a little sad, though, because so one thing I think like the Wheel of Time, for example, has that some of these other fantasy shows, and House of the Dragon especially, doesn't, is the feel of like a globe-trotting story. Like, and it does that by like actually going to different settings around the world and filming scenes there. And I worry. And House of the Dragon's a smaller scope. It always has been in terms of the journey of it all. But that's kind of been one of the things I haven't loved about it from the start is I miss the locales of like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I've always thought that complaint was so weird.
Why?
Because it's all fake. If they film a thing in a set and they tell me it's Timbuktu and it looks like Timbuktu, then for all I know, it is.
But I think
my position.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it's not fake, it looks better. So that's the flip side of that. I think when a show like Wheel of Time goes and puts a waygate on the middle of the beach in Morocco, they, you know, they could do it in a studio, but it probably won't look quite as good or quite as immersive. So sure. You're right. That is fair. Like, they can do a lot with studio magic, but I think there's also something to be said for on location filming that a studio just can't quite replicate.
And they are still doing it, just not in Costas. Like, they go to Wales, they go to other places in England.
Yeah.
They choose things for all kinds of reasons, yeah. For tax reasons, budget reasons, tariff reasons. We have a whole new exciting world things to care
That's
about.
True.
Anywho, we also have this set of the town of Tumbledon. We talked about that before. That'll be a big location in season 3 going forward. Some heavy stuff goes down there. It's hard to guess exactly how much will go down in season 3, but it's a it's a major place for a couple of big action scenes involving dragons and terrified villagers and soldiers, which hopefully it goes off without a hitch and excitingly.
Yeah, we're expecting it to have some pretty important moments in Tumbledon. They already kind of foreshadowed it in season 2. Yeah. And yeah, Unbox PhD is, you know, they're spying on the set. I wonder if they know this person's there and they're just like, let them do their thing. Or they're like, where is this super spy and their drone that they're still getting all this footage? You know, say one thing, I guess going to the middle of Iceland or wherever they filmed like the north scenes, it's a little easier to keep people away from the sets, I guess. But yeah, so anywho, Tumbledon, exciting. Curious to see how that goes down in the show.
When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp. All made safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
Memorial Day deals are here at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances, including Samsung. Plus, save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances, $396 or more. Like the Samsung Bespoke AI Laundry Combo, the largest capacity, fastest all-in-one laundry combo available that washes and dries in one machine. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid 5/15 through 6/18. Selection varies by location. Total savings varies based on purchase amount. See Lowe's.com for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm still a little feeling bummed from last week when they delayed A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms back to next year.
Yeah, me too.
I want to feel more energized, but a whole year without something thronesy is a year without sunshine. and it kills me because the things we're hearing about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms continue to be pretty positive. Yeah. Like, we haven't seen a trailer, but they did show a trailer off at the upfronts last week on Wednesday, I believe. And at least one journalist who was there, by the name of Lyra Hale, said, is A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms supposed to be a comedy? Because the first trailer at the upfronts made me laugh more than expected. And I'm like, I want to see that. But I can't, because WBD has decided to delay the show to next year, hopefully with good reason. Actually with good reason. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this at length last week. I think it was last week, whenever they announced the delay about all the reasons we didn't like it. I did see someone in the comments say that another Game of Thrones scooper, Dragon Demands, thinks it's because WBD wanted A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms to anchor the release of HBO Max Europe. I don't know whether that's true. I haven't looked into the schedule for that release. But Nick Zero, it is only scheduling and coinciding with her streamer's launch in Europe, I am pretty sure. I believe that. I mean, we know for pretty much a fact this is not because the show needs more time. Like, it is pretty much in a finished state more or less enough that it could realistically probably air over the summer is what it sounds like. You know, Martin saw all six episodes, mentioned the last two are in rough cuts, meaning it sounds like the first four are more or less finished. And that was in January.
That was a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. That was at the very start of this year. So, and you know, it's only six episodes. Anywho, we don't need to go too far down that rabbit hole. But
yeah, the headline is still don't like it, but I'm somehow still soldiering on.
Yes. Somehow we will survive this year without a Game of Thrones show. Hopefully it means we'll get two next year. That's the thing I'm most nervous about with this, is that House of the Dragon gets pushed and it's a 3-year gap or whatever between seasons two and three. That would be a real bummer. But that's not all. There's one other thing, right, that you wanted to talk about in Westeros.
I put it on here. This is interesting. Just before we move on to the next thing, just FYI, interesting story for you. There is a stunt woman who worked on Game of Thrones named Casey Michaels, who was injured performing a stunt when she was a white member of the Army of the Undead during the Battle of Winterfell, the Long Night episode. And there's even video of this. She and like a bunch of other folk are running off a roof ledge, supposed to land on a kind of a catch mat below. Mm-hmm. And she broke her ankle doing it. And she accused Warner Bros. Discovery and the production company specifically of not having proper precautions in place for the stunt coordinator, Rolly Earlham, giving kind of directions that increased risk. And HBO is settling with her for, I believe, $9.4 million. But it was interesting because she gave this big interview to Deadline where whatever the settlement was, it obviously didn't have a gag order because she was talking pretty openly about how the stunt coordinator, Rowley Earlham, she did not think that he was responsible in his duties, talking about what exactly happened. So I wasn't sure if that means there's going to be more litigation coming or if she's just airing what happened and also gets to keep the money.
Yeah. And I don't think I've read the entire Deadline article about this, but I'm pretty sure there's also a quote in there about like raising awareness for how sometimes stunt things are not properly overseen on set. And, you know, the coordinator for this show is also working on House of the Dragon, has overseen hundreds of stunts, probably thousands of stunts across hundreds of productions.
You're talking Marvel movies. He's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, totally. He gave Deadline a statement that was like, this is not an admission of guilt on his part. He was not named in the suit.
No.
The suit was against Warner Brothers Discovery specifically.
Well,
and
really specific. It was against the production company that produced Game of Thrones, which is not Fire always the same
or something
like that. Yeah. It's very confusing the way these things work.
Yes. And Julie Davies in the comments says, wow, I would have thought that's a risk you take as a stunt person. And
which it is, but there are still like safeguards and safety precautions to be put in place.
Yes. So the gist of this person's suit is that they had like thick mats. They were supposed to be doing this leap off of a balcony onto them. And basically over time they were instructed, do the leap in a less safe way. And they swapped the mats out for thinner mats to make it look more real as they hit the ground. So the argument is that they skirted some of the safety precautions they should have been taking. And this was, so for this person, this was a career ending injury. Like they shattered their ankle. Like they had multiple surgeries. They will most likely never work as a stunt person again. So that's why, like, you know, I think it's a pretty understandable one that they went after them for this, because again, their career is done. They have to find something else to do now.
Data entry.
Yes. Which is a lot less exciting than jumping off balconies dressed like a white. And this was also, correct me if I'm wrong here, Dan, I think this wasn't the first injury on the Game of Thrones set for a stunt person. I think they had more than one, but this was the worst.
Yeah, she mentioned that there was another person who got injured in this same stunt, taken to the hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, it's one of those things where, like, if there's a show that runs for eight seasons or a long time, or even a little bit of a movie, You probably, I am not in this world.
Yeah.
I guess I would say a stunt injury probably is something that happens from time to time. I mean, even with all the safety precautions you take in the world.
Sure.
If your job is to jump off a building under another thing, at some point, something might go wrong. But is it outside the lines of where it should be safety wise? Or is it in them? Is it an accidents happen situation? Or is it accidents happened, but this accident should not have happened, would not have happened, but for the negligence of someone involved?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, thinking of, like, you know, these shows, Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon, are very, very famous for setting, like, the most people on fire. Like, I don't think there's another production which
sounds fun when you say it and brag about it until someone dies of smoke inhalation.
Yeah, and they have gotten very, very good at it. They set a lot of people on fire on these shows in a very, very controlled way. So that's the sort of thing where it's like, obviously they are doing their due diligence. But, you know, imagine if someone didn't properly coat the person and they actually burned. It is definitely a gray area type thing. But I'm glad that this settlement happened and that it's maybe raising awareness. And from where we're sitting, it's also just an interesting factoid about the production that happened.
Factoid, didn't I? Instead of like, here's a sobering report of something horrible happening.
Yeah. Well, it's all part of the saga and history of Game of Thrones as a production.
Yeah, I agree with Julie. Yeah, there's going to be safety, but it's also going to be risky. And it's where you draw the line is going to be the job of the court or whatever body the stunt professionals make.
Exactly.
This kind of thing.
Yes.
By the way, I like Nick's suggestion. It might be a trailer at the end of The Last of Us season finale for End of the Seven Kingdoms. I'd enjoy that. We'll see. On to your exclusive, awesome, special interview with Brandon Sanderson, I did want to touch on another giant set going up for a different Warner Bros. Discovery HBO show, which I think merits mention because they're going real whole hog with this. Warner Bros. Discovery, on the same kind of studio that those Game of Thrones sets are on, are building a massive set for their Harry Potter show. Mm-hmm. We're talking like a whole school to educate the child actors. We're talking like multiple car parks. We're talking like a giant thing. This is Privet Drive, the street where Harry Potter lives as a kid, and he lives under the stairs or whatever he lived, in the cupboard, etc. And I remember in the movies, it was just like a house in some suburb was the exterior, and then they like had the interiors in a set. But no, this time they're like, no, we're going to build a whole neighborhood. That is going very above and beyond. They were saying that the shows could cost as much as $100 million an episode, which I believe would be the most expensive anything of anywhere at any time at any place. Someone said it would be 6 episodes a season. I don't know if I can clarify any of that. This is all like kind of just in the air. Man, that would be a mistake. But they are betting the farm metaphorically on this. They are putting a ton of money into this. It'll start filming soon. And I just wanted to get your feelings on the whole shebang.
Did you?
Now I do, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a giant mistake. I hope it crashes and burns, and I hope it loses WBD a lot of money. And then they think maybe we should put that money into maybe smarter productions, like launch some new series, because there are thousands and thousands of ideas we could do and books we could adapt. Maybe we should do more Game of Thrones. I don't know anything. But a show that is going to funnel money directly to J.K. Rowling, who will then funnel money into fighting against people's rights that she doesn't like. All that aside, I'm very I used to work as a bookseller. I've been watching J.K. Rowling milk the Harry Potter franchise without producing anything really new in it for like decades at this point. Or a decade and a half, whatever. I was a bookseller in 2015. I think this set picture that you're showing is very stupid because of all this. Like, why aren't you building a giant Hogwarts set? Like, of all
the things
you're building, Privet Drive as the big ambitious set. Like the normalcy of Privet Drive is part of what makes the story. I don't want to say makes the story work, but it like it is a logical thing for the story that Privet Drive is not an icon. No one watching a Harry Potter show should go, oh my God, Privet Drive was so mind blowing. Like that's not the point of, and like, you know, maybe this won't be that way, whatever, but it seems like an enormous waste of resources to build a huge Privet Drive set for the first episode or whatever. You know, yes, they can come back to it every, you know, part of it is that every season Harry kind of starts at Privet Drive or whatever, I'm sure, because the books often started him back at his aunt and uncle's house. But yeah, I don't know. I just think like this is one of those instances where it's like maybe do some location shooting and a little small set or whatever. Build Hogwarts, build Diagon Alley. Build any number of the iconic locations instead of stupid frickin' Privet Drive. So yeah, there's my rant. I hate this on multiple levels.
It does seem a little counterintuitive, right? Doesn't it? Like, I understand how you might want to build Hogwarts, a magical school for witches and wizards, for which there is no direct real world analog. But I assume there's a suburb somewhere you can go and point a camera at a house to capture Privet Drive.
Yeah.
Reading the tea leaves like this and the House of the Dragon sets, I wonder if Warner Bros. Discovery has like a mandate to do more things on the lot or something.
Yeah.
Which this is me purely speculating. I don't really know. But when you look at that and you do think like, it seems like a waste of money. You do wonder if there's a reason behind it. And that's something I can think of. I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe they want to do more things and not travel. Maybe it's expensive, too few tax credits. Maybe they'll somehow come ahead on this.
Yeah, totally. I think it is interesting. Like, do they have some kind of mandate? We can only speculate, but to see this sort of set go up, again, because it is this specific setting, it does make me wonder if there is something like that going on. Because, you know, you talked about House of the Dragon. They're still going to Wales. They're still going around England to film. Like, there's got to be a suburb that could stand in for Privet Drive. Like, it is the least, by design, it is the least remarkable setting of the entire series. And yes, on Vogue craze, I'm sure you are sick of hearing me complain about Rowling, and I as well am sick of having to do it, but someone needs to. But I also am complaining about the show here. Like, to be fair, I aside from my issues with J.K. Rowling, I also think remaking Harry Potter less than a, you know, like a decade after the movies came out, that like kids are still enjoying those movies today, and HBO is an adult leaning brand. So making a prestige show for children on their adult leaning, I think there are a lot of issues with this conceptually. But yeah, we'll see. I'm sure we will be talking about this again, whether I watch it or not. You know,
it's too big not to. I'm sorry. And look, we'll talk about Rowling again, because as many people as we would like to, there's no separating her from this. No separating her from Harry Potter. It's impossible.
Yeah.
She is a bigot and a hate monger and doing bad things for the world. And to give her this bigger platform, it's going to matter. Man, it's going to be a crazy show. I don't just mean the TV show. The circus around it will be insane.
Yes,
it better will. Or worse, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. This is such a bad choice. Oh, God. I'd be nervous all the time if I worked there. But it's happening, so we'll cover it. Okay, why don't we talk about Brandon Sanderson? He's a very successful author. He's written such things as The Stormlight Archive and the Mistborn series. Sold tens of millions of books in his career. And Daniel, you got to talk to him exclusively. Yes. I'll ask for your basic impressions. What's his vibe?
Basic impressions. So like I've been following Sanderson's work and his career for since 2013-ish, for quite a while. I've been reading his books, and he's just a really down to earth guy. Like he was very gracious with making time to discuss this stuff. You know, sometimes when people have been working in an industry for a long time, they might seem jaded or like they're tired or they don't necessarily want to talk about their greatest hits. He was the exact opposite, you know, just very, very, you know, happy to talk about his work and excited to talk about the things he's working on and books like Wind and Truth, and very candid about these things. So yeah, the general impression was I expected him to be nice, and he was nicer than I expected. I do not know. He was sitting.
Oh, true. It's a Zoom interview. Sorry.
Yes, Zoom interview. I was not in a room with Brandon Sanderson. Maybe one day, but not this day.
Sure. Between like 5'2 and 6'9?
Probably somewhere in there. Probably okay. Somewhere right around the middle of that. But yeah, we talked about a lot of stuff, and the interview is now out. So, you know, you can find it on our YouTube channel. You can find it on winteriscoming.net. It was a far-ranging interview. We were planned to talk for about a half an hour. We talked for about 45 minutes about things like Wind and Truth, his latest Stormlight Archive novel, the third Mistborn series he's working on right now, his non-Cosmere short fiction collection, Tailored Realities, and just kind of the general direction of the Cosmere, which is like it's an interconnected universe where all of his adult fantasy books take place. They're set on different worlds in this fictional universe. So we talked a little bit about that, and also just, you know, where he's at in his career, because he's kind of using some tricks from the early days of his career now, and it's interesting to see an author who is so developed as Brandon Sanderson kind of going back to, I don't want to say going back to the basics, because it's some parts of it are like he has the privilege to do these things now. Like, for example, Ghost Bloods, the third Mistborn series, he's writing all three of them in a row before he publishes any of them. And that's what he did with the original Mistborn trilogy. So it's interesting to see him go back to some things like that. And we talked about all that and more. So, yeah, it was wonderful. Wonderful to speak to him.
Wind and Truth is the latest book in his Stormlight Archive series, the fifth, I'm going to guess, longest of this big kind of premier opus he's writing.
Yeah.
And I understand that it went over pretty well, sold a ton. Was there anything about the response that surprised him? Because I know that there was some ambivalence among fans, certain elements of it. Was he happy with how fans took it down?
Yeah, he was. He said he is, you know, there were things he designed in this book to intentionally make it feel a little uncomfortable for people, or like something was off. And that was a fascinating thing to hear him talk about, because it's a lot of like nuts and bolts writer things. Like one of the main characters kind of takes a back seat a little bit in this book. He's still got a great storyline, but like he's the hero who's always in the thick of things, and he's not there when stuff goes down in this book. The format of the book is a little different. So he has this 5-part structure that he sticks to religiously with these books. And then this one, he did it very differently. It's like the 10 days before this climactic event. So the book is broken up by each day. Cool. So there are all sorts of little things he did. Yeah. Yeah. And another character who you expect to kind of have overcome her issues a little bit, like she regresses in this book. So there are all sorts of things he did like that. Basically, he talked about this is a 10 book series, and if he's going to make it to 10 books and have it be interesting all the way there, he had to unravel things a little bit here at this halfway point. Like essentially you're not just seeing a new climax for the series. You're seeing a series kind of come apart here at this halfway point. This is almost like the Empire Strikes Back a little bit of this series. So he, you know, it has been a little divisive, the response to this. Some people have loved this book. I personally really liked it. I was surprised to see that some people really, really didn't like this book, because it felt pretty much the same as every Stormlight Archive book to me, except a little different. So yes, he is satisfied from what he told me with the response to it, but there were some things that surprised him. A lot of people complained about the prose, so the actual writing, feeling mm-hmm. too modern.
Okay.
And I thought this was an interesting criticism. He said none of his beta readers caught it. None of, you know, he didn't think too hard on it. Maybe he's inching a little modern because this world is inching a little more modern. But I feel like he's been doing that for quite a while. And Dan, so you read Mistborn, The Final Empire fairly recently, mm-hmm. which is the first Mistborn. It's the second book he published. And that's something you pointed out about the first Mistborn book, was that you noticed there were moments he used like modern speak that jarred you out of the story a little bit, but like it's part of his style. So yeah.
Was it more modern?
I mean, yes.
They mentioned like Skibbity Toilet.
No. So there's a world hopping character. He goes between worlds. He's seen all of the kind of technological progression of some worlds. He introduces the word therapist in this book because there's a storyline of one character who essentially invents therapy on this planet. And it was more organic in the last book. And here this world hopping character is like, oh, you're a therapist. And the character he says it to is like, I don't know what that means. So like there are things like that where he does make a few jokes that are pretty modern feeling. But again, like, I don't know, for me, like the third book, Oathbringer, there's a part in that book where Dalinar, who's one of the main characters, talks about the easy chair he's sitting in. And I remember reading that and being like, All right, Dalinar has an easy chair. We're using modern language, and that just is what it is, you know? So I was surprised that so many people, I almost wonder if like his readership is aging a little bit or something, that now starting to, you know, these things aren't working as well for them, when he's been fairly consistent with this stuff.
Yeah, he hasn't been around for like that long.
Yeah.
Like the mid 2000s.
2005.
Mid to late. Yeah. So you could be right. Also, sometimes people just have a backlash or something and it's hard to pinpoint exactly.
Yeah.
The reason. I think sometimes people respond to something badly, but they don't quite know why. So they pick something to focus on to like be a totem for their displeasure.
I agree with that.
And this might be one of those things. I've read the book. I will say I'm impressed that Brandon Sanderson, by the way, do you know how old he is? I don't. 40 something.
I believe he's around 49. He's almost 50. 49.
Good age. I'm impressed by the ambition, because his whole thing is he started a Stormlight Archives books as a high fantasy series, Mistborn high fantasy series. As I understand, all the books in his shared universe, the Cosmere, or most of them anyway, the next entries will be a little more set in modern-ish times. No need for old-timey language there. Yeah. With an aim toward eventually setting all of his books, not just one series, in a distant space-agey future. Honestly, it sounds almost too ambitious. Like it's a Marvel will collapse under the weight of its own grand ambition sort of thing. But I do like that he's swinging big. Did he talk about that at all?
Yeah, we did. We did talk about that because I've been very curious about it, because, you know, he's talked before about he doesn't view himself as a sci-fi writer. Like epic fantasy is really his love. Rather than like, you know, like the like Kim Stanley Robinson hard sci-fi where the science is at the heart of things.
Yeah. He,
that's not his bag. But as the Cosmere has gone on, there are books where it feels like science fiction, but the science is the science of the Cosmere. And so it's not that every book or every series is moving into the space age, but so Mistborn specifically, his grand plan for that has always been an epic fantasy series, which is the original trilogy, which then informs the mythology for what was going to be like an 80s tech thriller. That's the one he's writing right now, Ghostbloods. And then there was a steampunk one in there too, Wax and Wayne. And then that goes to a space age science fiction. The world of the Stormlight Archive is a little more organic. Like, it's 10 books. There is going to be a time jump now between books 5 and 6, but it's not like Mistborn where it's like hundreds of years pass and suddenly people are riding around in trains, whereas before they only had horses and carriages. That's kind of the progression of Mistborn specifically. But as he's gone on, like, so I asked him, like, are you still going to be writing epic fantasy? Like, is everything going to be space age from now on? And the way he framed this was that, like, he wants to write more like Dune type sci-fi, like space opera, things that are science fiction, but they feel like fantasy instead, you know, in his main series and kind of as the story goes on. But he'll still jump around chronologically to things to do epic fantasy stories. Like, there's this character Hoid, who is the world hopping person that I mentioned. He appears briefly in like all of Sanderson's books in this universe. He's eventually going to write Hoid's backstory. And when he does that, that's going to be like a Bronze Age epic fantasy. So he's not totally ruling out more traditional like sword and sorcery type epic fantasy. But yeah, the Cosmere as a whole, like with Wind and Truth and now with Ghostbloods, which is what he's writing right now. He's around a quarter of the way, I think a little more than a quarter of the way now through his first draft of the first book of Ghostbloods. They're moving into modernity. So it is interesting. I've never seen a series attempt this. And it's funny. It's funny that you said, like, the ambition almost sounds too great. Will it collapse? Because when he pitched this, he said to his editor the first time, specifically with Mistborn, that arc, the editor was kind of like, you sound really ambitious in a way that was like, that's never going to happen. But he's writing the third series in that right now. So he's getting there.
Yeah, he is nothing if not committed, which I can appreciate. Daniel, where can folk find the full interview, written or audio visual?
Yeah, so you can watch it on our YouTube channel.
You can.
I believe you can listen to it on the usual places the podcast is at. You can also read a transcribed version of it on winteriscoming.net. We've been writing about Brandon Sanderson a lot, so it should be pretty easy to find. But if you go to like interviews or books on the top taskbar of the website, should be pretty easy to find it there. And producer Richard, the marvelous person that he is, just put it in the chat as well. And it is a full spoiler interview. So be aware, if you haven't read Wind and Truth, definitely read Wind and Truth first before you watch the whole thing.
Or if you're not planning to read Wind and Truth, but you like
carry
things
on
in summary.
Exactly. Exactly.
Daniel, so you've interviewed Brandon Sanderson, you've interviewed George R. R. Martin. What famous author or celebrity are you going to interview next?
That's a fair question, and I do not know. Who would you like to?
Sorry, that was a better question.
Who are my pipe dream interviews? I'll be honest, Sanderson was such a big one that I genuinely don't have an answer at the ready for that. Like, I'm looking
at J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah. If I can do a necromancy interview with J.R.R. Tolkien, the spirit of Tolkien, that sounds great. There are definitely lots of good authors who I would love to speak to about their works. But I don't have an answer for that off the top of my head. So I'm just going to stammer and embarrass myself. How's that?
that's no problem. It wouldn't have to be necromancy. You could do time travel. I think it's out of the box.
I feel like time travel is a more daunting proposition than necromancy. Like, if I had to pick one, I don't know. How does time travel work? Speaking with his spirit, maybe that's a little more feasible. Maybe not. Who knows?
Would you rather interview J.R.R. Tolkien through time travel or necromancy? Leave a comment. All right.
Yeah.
And while you debate that, Daniel, what are you watching? What are all of you watching as we wind down the show?
Yeah, so I am behind on The Last of Us. Like, I have seen The Last of Us, so we can talk all about it. We can spoil it. But I did not watch episode 6 when it went up.
It was, but really I am still good. Watching.
Yeah, did you enjoy it?
Oh yeah, I loved it. I cried manly tears at the final just conversation like, just between like Ellie and Joel. Yeah, he's like, "Now you're gonna leave me." And he's like, "I want to try," and I'm like, "Yeah, you're gonna try. You're gonna get back together." It was great. I thought it was really, really good. It was emotionally potent. I liked the flashback structure, kind of the spending time with each of Ellie's subsequent birthdays as she grows up and puts more and more together and starts drifting away. I thought it was very powerful. I liked it a lot. Probably the highlight of the season. Does that mean that the highlight of the season is whenever Joel shows up? I don't think it has to be.
Yeah.
But this was a really, really good episode.
Yeah, totally. I really enjoyed this one too. This is the one we also get to see what happened with Eugene. So a lot of really important stuff happens in this episode in terms of Ellie and Joel's relationship. I loved that they did the museum scenes. Those are from the games, and I think they're also very special in kind of the mythos of the show as an entity, because so when Craig Mazin, one of the showrunners, when he first was trying to sign on and talking to Neil Druckmann, the game creator, who's also a showrunner, about doing this, he went to visit Druckmann at Naughty Dog, and they were making The Last of Us Part 2 at the time. And Druckmann was like, "Do you want to see something from the new game?" And Craig Mazin said yes. And he showed him that scene that was in this episode of the museum. So aside from just the fact that it's a beautiful, heartwarming scene of Joel being a good father, getting to give this foster daughter a nice birthday, something he kind of missed the opportunity for with his own kids. Or a nice whatever 16th, however old she was for it.
15.
Giving her that nice experience. It also feels like a landmark moment for the show to have reached this point, since it's kind of like at the origin of the working relationship of the two showrunners. I liked this episode. I am a little torn on, so this conversation with Joel and Ellie in the video game happens at the very, very end. So they've had to reshuffle things a little bit to give this season the sort of narrative arc they wanted, because they wanted to make it clear to viewers earlier, I think, that Ellie knows what Joel did. Does that bother you at all that they changed the order here? I feel like it worked for the most part.
It did not bother me at all. No. A, because I don't remember the game that I played the whole thing.
Yeah.
But no, I just didn't. I mean, it maybe it will in the fullness of the show when it's all done.
Yeah.
But I was too busy weeping and being affected and enjoying it to really care about. It's at the right place, though, which I think is what you want to have happen. Now, I do have some complaints about the show, but I think I'll hold them off until next week after the season finale.
Sure.
When we'll catch up then. But no, I thought it was pretty much a home run.
Cool.
I do think The Last of Us is getting the kind of backlash where it's not like I don't see any issues with it, but I think a lot of the complaints I have not been able to really square with what I've been seeing, like about how Ellie is acting or Bella Ramsey is acting. I just don't see a lot of it. But yeah. I did think the finale was curious, and I'll share that with you next week. I saw it. I got that episode.
Nice. Oh, I'm glad you finally got to see it. Yeah, I do have some qualms with specific aspects of Bella Ramsey this season, but I largely agree with you. I think it's interesting. The video game, second video game, the backlash was all Abby, and specifically the toxic dudes on the internet backlash was 100% geared toward Abby. In the show, the toxic dudes on the internet backlash crowd is all at Bella Ramsey. Like, Bella Ramsey's getting all of it this season.
Sorry, Robert.
Oh, he's just saying sorry he joined late. I thought we spoiled The Last of Us for you. I'm glad we presumably didn't. But yeah, so I am excited for us to talk more about this next week and kind of the season as a whole and where it goes from here, because I have enjoyed it. I do. I am sad that it's already almost over. It feels like, do you think the hype is less for this season? I feel like it is making smaller splash than the first season.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to, if you release these things 2 years apart, that's what's going to happen. Sorry about it. That's just the truth. And we need to get through your head, studio executives, especially WBD executives. If you release things eternities apart, the hype will die down and there's nothing you can do about it. So try to plan ahead and get things out. If not a year apart, then like not 2 years apart.
Yeah,
that's what you have to do. Because yes, you're right. It is hype. The hype for House of Dragon season 2 is less than the hype for House of Dragon season 1. The hype for Last season 2 is less than the hype for Last of Us season 1. It's just going to happen.
Yeah,
I know this. I'm a soothsayer. I'm a genius, and you need to listen to me and a common sense, frankly. We're going to get to it in a second, but like in the lightning round, like Netflix, who I don't think makes as good shows as HBO, but they're planning like seasons 2. They're already rolling on season 3 of The Last Airbender disaster. Yeah. Not really. It's fine. Before season 2 was even aired. I'm like, that's good. At least you're planning ahead. And meanwhile, The Last of Us is like, we started streaming season 3 next year. And I'm like, oh my God, why would you do that?
Yeah.
So that's a quibble I have.
That's fair. And I think it's an especially difficult quibble for The Last of Us, because without getting into spoilers for this upcoming episode, I think there's already been maybe an interview where they talked about there will be more of a cliffhanger than like season 1, which was, we got a rounded full story here at the end. Like, they're adapting the second game over the course of potentially 3 seasons. So it's just splitting it up a little bit more. And to make people wait for something like that is even worse. Kind of like Squid Game avoided this. Squid Game ended on a crazy cliffhanger, but the next season's coming like 6 months later. I do think studios are starting to pick up on this, though, because not like
Warner Bros, though,
no,
they seem to be doubling down on the long waits.
And they are the ones who originated it, to be fair here, like with Westworld, which very notably got progressively watched less and less as it went on.
Also, the show got worse and worse,
and the show got worse and worse as it went on. Yeah. But Westworld was kind of the first of these prestige shows to do 2 years between every season, because it was just, and 8 episodes also for a lot of them, because it was such a big production that it needed it, which may be true. But people just weren't willing to wait that much. But Apple is filming quicker. Like Silo is already rolling on its fourth and final season. I'm pretty sure they wrapped season 3. You mentioned Netflix. I am hopeful that whenever Amazon renews the Wheel of Time, when Amazon, that they will try to be forward thinking with that and commit to it for the long run, instead of like the wait and see, which I think is where a lot of these studios are going wrong.
They did just have a blooper reel, which makes me optimistic that something's going to move. Yeah. Again, it's like, you know that something's weird at Warner Bros. Discovery, because like when even The Last of Us, which is one of your big, big shows, you're taking forever to do it, like something is screwed up. Like someone's backward over there.
Yep. It's like definitely
maybe if it was like an expensive show that didn't have a big built-in audience, okay, maybe I can understand waiting until the season airs to decide. But this one, you know, you got to hit. Keep the train moving.
So a show that I'm hoping gets more seasons that I've seen all of that you just started, Murderbot. The first 2 episodes are out. Did you watch them? What'd you think?
I did watch them. And I enjoyed them. I don't know. I think my expectations might have been a little too high. For a show called Murderbot about a robot who hates humans, I wanted a bit more edge. I thought it was a little milquetoast. Still nice. Still fun. Still good to watch. I enjoyed it. But yeah, I wanted more edge. I wanted more black humor, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely... we'll see as it goes on, but the humor is pretty much in the vein that it's in. And I do think there's a little bit of undermining expectations to kind of the entire character, right? Like the Murderbot name is a big old contradiction. This android sec unit is like, what should I call myself? I'm a murder bot. Meanwhile, it just wants to watch TV and not really murder anyone.
Not hurt anybody.
But yeah, I am curious to see what you think as it goes on, because I did enjoy it. I liked it for the humor because it was kind of a breath of fresh air to just have a light, fun show. And I really like Alexander Skarsgård in the part. Cool. But yeah, new episodes cute. Fridays.
I'm sure I'll adjust. It was like he has this like tragic backstory where he killed people, and it's being sold as like some really deep, dark thing. And I'm like, your name is Murderbot. But that'll be something I adjust to. I tried, this isn't a fantasy or sci-fi show, but I tried The Studio on Apple TV Plus. Great. So good.
Nice.
It's really, really funny, really well acted, and a delight for a film nerd like me, full of references that I the entire time was like, oh, that thing, oh, that thing, oh, that thing. I love that show. So I'll keep watching there. Data Race thinks season two has been good. Yes. I was worried when Joel died, but they've done a good job. I'm now concerned about waiting 2 years for season three, aka the Abby season. Yes. As are we. We'll talk about that next week. We'll have plenty to say after the finale.
For sure. The other things, we can just mention them briefly here before we dive into the lightning round. There have been trailers for Jurassic World Rebirth.
That's part of the lightning round.
Is it part of the lightning round? Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. I take it back. Hang in for a few more moments of mystery. Should we just start the lightning round?
We should.
All right, let's do it. We're pushing time. Producer Richard has places to be. He can't listen to us ramble for hours more. So if this is your first time tuning in, we're going to go through 8 news stories we did not have time to get to in the main body of the show. We are going to address them in 20 seconds or less, or we are buzzed into infamy and shame. Dan, are you ready for the lightning round?
Yes, hit me first, please. Actually, yes, hit me first.
Okay, you sound unsure, so I am going to hit you first with this, and I hope you find your commitments. So Ryan Kira Armstrong, that is the actor who played Fern in Skeleton Crew. She will star alongside Sarah Michelle Gellar in a Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot.
Yeah, what an idea. I really liked Buffy the Vampire Slayer a lot when I was younger. I have no idea if it'll be any good. Mostly, I think this news is like, so I guess they're not making Skeleton Crew season 2, huh? Which I can take or leave. I guess it's fine. I enjoyed it more or less. A Buffy reboot. I don't know what to think. I don't know if I'll watch it. I'll see a trailer and I'll decide. Daniel. Nice.
Yes.
All right. So it was HBO Go. Then it became HBO Now. Then it became HBO Max. Then it became Max. And now it's HBO Max again. Your thoughts on the constant changes?
Obviously, I don't mind the HBO Go to now to Max. There were some functional differences with, I think, Go. So fine. But the Max back to HBO Max is a foreseeable stupidity that I feel like we all knew was going to happen. I hope next it just goes to, wait for it, HBO.
Pretty cool.
Call me, guys. I've got your next $10 billion idea. Dan, so the Screen Actors Guild is suing an Epic gaming company subsidiary for recreating Darth Vader's voice with AI in Fortnite without bargaining or providing notice.
Yeah, so Darth Vader talks to James Earl Jones is from the movie's voice now in Fortnite, and the estate or whoever has the rights doesn't like it because they weren't notified and they weren't bargained. Not really because they have a problem with using James Earl Jones's dead voice. Apparently it's being used to like say, you know, curses, slurs, that kind of thing. It'll be an interesting new world we're going to live in very, very shortly or right now.
Yeah.
Daniel, I don't think either of us really have a hold on this story, but it ended up with you. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
David Leitch, I don't know how to say it, the director of Deadpool 2, may well helm the Gears of War video game adaptation for Netflix. You ever played that?
I have played. I think at least one or two Gears of War games, kind of like Halo, post-apocalyptic shooter games. Pretty decent story. This alien invasion. I think it's one of those things where it'll be a total coin toss, but that's a good director to have attached to it. They could do a lot worse. So hopefully it's decent. We'll see. Right. Jury's out. Speaking of Netflix, you already mentioned this, Dan, but surely you can talk about it for 20 more seconds. Production on Avatar The Last Airbender Season 2 finished. Just today, in fact, they announced that it finished, I believe. And production on Season 3 is getting underway.
It was yesterday, but you were very close. I thought it was fine. I didn't adore that series, The Last Airbender remake. I like the original. Mostly, I'm just happy to see some studio thinking ahead and doing things back to back and getting rolling and using their time wisely. And I wish other studios like HBO and Fubo would take a cue from them. That's it. That's a takeaway.
That's
all right,
fair.
Daniel, we're back to the trailers that you love so much. So, Daniel, the trailer for Jurassic Park Rebirth drop coming out on July 2nd. Are you in the theater?
I maybe will begrudgingly go. I mean, I love Jurassic Park, like deeply, deeply love Jurassic Park. It's a formative story for me. They're beating that dinosaur's corpse to death, but I do enjoy the idea of Scarlett Johansson kicking a Quetzalcoatlus flying dinosaur in the face. So I probably will see it out of morbid curiosity.
Neat.
Dan, here's one I'm curious if you will watch. We also got a trailer this week for It, Welcome to Derry, the It prequel series, which is coming to HBO this fall.
I think I probably will. I like HBO. I liked It. I liked Andy Muschietti, the director who's involved in this. I think it could probably be good. I like the book. It's 6 episodes of fun. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be like a mini series or an ongoing thing. I think it's supposed to be ongoing, in which case it'll probably be 4 years when the next one comes. Cross that bridge when we come to it. Now, it looks decent. But man, I'm really getting tired of these waits. It's really starting to affect me.
Yeah, they have finally, 3 seasons. Just a sidebar here. 3 seasons planned for It, Welcome to Derry. Each one farther back in time. Faster.
Okay. Sorry, that's my own bugaboo. Daniel.
Yes.
The new movie called Predator, Killer of Killers, an animated film starring the Predator from the movie franchise Predator, is coming to Hulu on June 6th. You're going to watch that one?
Obviously. Yes. I love me some Predator. I do. And unlike Jurassic Park, where I'm like, what are we doing here? This new animated movie, it's an anthology film. We see Vikings, samurai and ninjas, World War II pilots, and it is being co-directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who made Prey, who is awesome. Prey is an incredible movie. Whether you like Predator or not, watch Prey. So, I will definitely be watching that.
All right. And I hope you'll be watching us when we return every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time for another episode of Take the Black Live, where we go over all things, have offensive movies, TV and books, etc. Also find us in podcast form wherever podcasts are available. Go to our YouTube channel, go to our Facebook page to see us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST, or just in general for fun. Why not? I've been Dan, he's been Dan, we've been Dan's, you've been you. It's been a delight talking to you, and we'll see you very soon. Goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.